Bells, welcome to another edition of Awesome Mania. I am Michael, being joined by your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
What up?
And as always, our most frequent guest and friend, Mr. Matt Carroll, who is once again, as always, shirtless.
Yep.
And he's not wearing pants.
Nope.
So, just a reminder, this is the new version of Awesome Mania, where we will be sitting down to watch pay-per-view and commenting along as we watch it. It's designed to be listened to as we, as you watch the pay-per-view, basically. There will be periods of silence where we're just watching the match. Also, because Peacock is Peacock.
You said cock.
I like it better when we record in the morning because Matt isn't trying to be funny. But because Peacock is Peacock, the commercial breaks that we'll get between each match will be differently long for everybody. So when we have a 45-second commercial, you may have a 30-second commercial or a 15-second commercial. So what we'll do is we'll let you know when we are going in and coming out of commercials. But what you need to do now is go ahead and open up In Your House 11, Buried Alive, or as it is on Peacock, Season 2, Episode 8. Because, yeah. And while you're doing that and getting through the opening, like, minute of ads that you're given, we're just going to run down a little bit about the pay-per-view. It debuted October 20th, 1996. It is from the Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana. And the headline match is, of course, the Buried Alive match between Undertaker and Mankind, which was kind of the blow off of their feud at the time. There were three dark matches. One before the show, which was The Stalker defeating Barry Justin Windham. Hawk Bradshaw. But yeah, The Stalker was Barry Windham, which, if you remember, up until this point, they'd been putting Justin Bradshaw over pretty hard. So to have The Stalker beat him is, and then they do nothing with The Stalker and he just disappears and goes back to WCW. And then after the main event, they had two dark matches, which was the Godwins versus the New Rockers and Shawn Michaels defending the WWF Championship against Goldust, which I would have really liked to have seen because yeah. I think that would have been an absolute banger. Anyway. Yep. So, hopefully you are through the opening crawl, the opening like advert that you get on Peacock, like the pre-run ad. And you guys ready?
Yep.
Yep.
All right. So, we are going to be beginning at 00000. And we are going to be beginning in 3, 2, 1, go. I love that. I love that intro. It's way better than the one they have now.
And would you like to skip the intro?
No.
yes. The Undertaker stuff that actually was in his Titantron until they technically got rid of the entrance videos.
What was your guys' favorite version of Taker?
The one where he's retired?
I mean,
that wasn't an option.
Oh.
So I mean, when I got into wrestling, like Taker was doing the whole biker gimmick at the time.
Oh my god, yeah.
And
Ben hates the biker
gimmick. And then he was doing like the whole big evil Red Devil before returning to, you know, the Dead Man when he took on Kane at WrestleMania 20.
Yeah.
So like for me, PlayStation. So for me it's like
Carmina Burana.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite version of The Undertaker? Don't tell me it's the American Badass.
Like, well, I mean, for me, it'd probably be like when he came back as Dead Man.
Okay. So your first experience of Dead Man Undertaker.
Yeah. Like when he came back as it in like 2004.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, but I did enjoy the American Badass and Big Evil Red Devil Taker too, you know. But that's when I came into it, you know.
Right, that automatically nullifies your opinion. No, I'm kidding. For me, it was... Do you remember when they did the Undertaker versus Undertaker match?
Yes. Purple Taker?
Purple Taker with, like, the enhanced entrance music.
Yeah.
And his purple gear.
Yeah.
Not when he had the... Not when he had the face mask, but...
Yeah. No, I liked Purple Taker too. Mine was Ministry of Darkness Taker.
Yeah.
Like I like.
So, small point of order. You're going to notice this as we go through the pay per view. There was a bit going on throughout the pay per view where, at the time, Jim Ross was kind of playing the character of a heel commentator.
Yes,
and his mic legitimately has like technical issues throughout the event. And he plays it up as being part of his heel character. It's really well done.
Is this the one where his mic keeps shutting off and he keeps blaming Vince for it shutting off and stuff? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and isn't there one? Oh god, there's a pay-per-view coming up here at some point soon where he gets his own table and he puts it in front of the regular announce table and he just sits at it by himself and commentates. I love that.
And people were like, "Oh, heel Michael Cole will never work on me. He's just doing heel. He's just doing heel Jim Ross."
Oh yeah. I mean, Michael Cole has stolen everything from Jim Ross.
That's true. Goddamn.
Well, I mean, when you look at it from an announcer aspect, I mean,
Jake the Snake would always say the best guys know where to steal their good stuff.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that he necessarily stole it from Jim Ross because, like, Jim Ross trained him.
Yeah. Oh, and I love, because we've been talking about, like, JR real quick, I love how, like, we just saw Hunter Hearst Helmsley do the entrance.
Yeah.
And they walk past, like, the buried alive grave.
Yeah.
And the woman who's with him gets, like, a little freaked out and starts, like, grabbing his arm a little tighter.
Yeah.
Like, I actually like that because it actually sells.
It's a really nice little bit of psychology.
Yeah. Like, I also like how it sells from a valet standpoint. Even though they're not even in the match of Buried Alive, it sells the concept of Buried Alive.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Small point of order. We're about to see Stone Cold come to the ring. This is the debut of his music.
Of the glass break?
Yeah. This is the first time they used the famous Austin music. Like, given who's in this match has the potential to absolutely fuck.
But you mean in a good way or a bad way?
Yeah.
Look at that. You got like the little Shawn Michael kid cosplayer.
He's not really a cosplayer. They sold all that shit at the merch stand, dude.
They really did. Back in the day.
That was all merch you could buy at the event. You could
buy the fucking heart, the broken heart sunglasses. You could buy the little hat.
The cap, the gloves, the whole thing.
Yeah, dude, you could literally buy his entire wardrobe that he wore to the ring at the merch stand for like $20 a piece. Like each piece, $20 about. It was crazy, dude. They merchandised the fuck out of these guys back then. Way more than they do now. I love it, man. I'm starting already with JR. Oh God, dude! Just look at this, man. Two of the future goats of the game, right here. Before they were top guys.
That was a really nice little moment there. Like, Austin was like, is she going to get involved? And Triple H was like, stay.
And isn't it at this point, like, Hunter is a heel. And yeah. Isn't, in a way, Austin a heel?
Austin's still kind of a tweener at this point.
Okay.
Mainly because Austin 316 happened about 3 months ago.
Right.
He doesn't officially turn, quote-unquote, face until WrestleMania next year when he faces Brett.
Which wasn't supposed to happen. I mean, it was
a double turn, yeah.
Yeah, the fans did that themselves during the match, which we'll get to in a couple months here, but...
Yeah, because, like, I mean, and the reason I ask is because you got Austin arguing with the fans and stuff like that.
What's Helmsley doing?
I mean, they're both heels, so they're both, you know. But did you guys ever see that video? I think it was from like 99 or 2000 when these two are wrestling a dark match and some guy tries to get in at Austin.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was post-match. Austin had won, yeah.
Yeah, and Hunter stomped
just potatoes the dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Like, Austin and Triple H have actually come out and talked about it.
Yeah, well, Austin said that in the back, him and the guy had a come to Jesus meeting.
You know what's really interesting about this era of like WWE? You know how like kind of before this era, you had all those like the personality clashes, like Hogan and Warrior and Hogan and I know Hogan's involved in a lot of these. Shawn and Brett, right?
Yeah.
You take Triple H, The Rock, and Stone Cold, three of the greatest of all time. They're in the Fed at the same time, and you never hear that they hated each other or wouldn't put each other over or any of that.
Oh, yeah. The cool thing about that was they did have guys that they didn't want to put over, but it was never the like tippy top guys. Like, you know, it was always if it did, like, for example, the whole Bart Gunn thing when he won the Brawl for All. Like, Austin's like, who's this jerk off? Why am I going to put him over in anything? Like, you know what I mean? But like,
yeah,
you're absolutely right. Like, these three, all they did was make each other and make millions of dollars in the process. You know, they got it. They got what it was about.
What I also think that maybe helped, like with, you know, Austin, Rock, and Hunter, was the fact that you're going through this attitude era where you're going up against WCW, and it's like that whole, you know, we're in this together mentality.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, back in like the 80s, the Hogan era, where it was like, you know, you get hurt, you lose your spot, and then you got to try to get your spot back. And normally the way to do that is to sabotage somebody.
Well, if they got hurt though, in this era, they lost their spot too. I mean, they were dealing with that same bullshit, but they got it more here. I think that, you know, they could all make money together as opposed to one or two guys making the money. They could all make the money together if they all just work for it.
Yeah. Maybe using the injury wasn't the right point to make, but you know, but you kind of got where I was trying to get at, though.
Yeah. The thing is what you should have been talking about, it was like backstage politicking and shit.
Yeah.
See, here's something that I don't understand, right? And I go on about this every month. Why is Austin working the arm? His finishing move is the stunner.
I mean,
take away an arm, take away the pedigree.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, maybe.
It can also, I was going to say the same thing, it can also be to weaken their ability to do their finishing maneuver too.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, yeah, sure, Hunter could probably hook one arm and really hit the pedigree, but he gets most effective
both arms with one. Tomb. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice clothesline.
Yeah.
It's so weird that they're doing a split screen showing the announcers and.
Well, it's not because the storyline that's going on.
Well, yeah. Storyline wise, knowing what the storyline is, yeah, it's normal, but like you wouldn't really see that a lot.
You know, I love that, that everybody was like, oh, Austin had the five moves of doom or whatever. You can have five moves, but if you know how to put them together correctly, you can still have a hell of a match.
Well, Austin didn't have the five moves of doom. He had a set series of like signature moves, but he did a bunch of other stuff as well, which is why the thing didn't hold up for Cena either.
Yeah. But I mean, he always talks about like when he worked with guys like Hunter, how Hunter would like, you know, he had such a much more limited skill base than Hunter did or move set than Hunter did. Yeah. But, you know, Hunter knew how to sell his move set so well that his stuff always worked.
Yeah.
That is one thing I will say about this era, the start of the Attitude Era, is WWE was so deep with good talent that could sell. They put out some great matches.
I mean, on this card alone, right? You've got Austin, Hunter, Owen, Bulldog, Goldust, Undertaker, Mankind, Shawn Michaels, like. That's an all-time roster.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
That was a nice, like, knee drop to the head for the pinfall. Attempt.
Yeah, Hunter's knee drop is just beautiful.
I was about to say he might have the best knee drop ever.
Like,
I still think that goes to Flair, where he does the knee drop and does the roll afterwards.
That's good too.
I always liked it when Triple H did the knee smash into the spine buster.
Yeah.
I always enjoy that.
That like knee lift thing that he would do. Yeah.
Yeah. He'd have the guy run off the ropes, knee smash, and then he would pick him up and hit him with the spine buster.
Yeah.
Always a good sequence by Triple H there. All right, JR, we need to switch the channel you're on. Triple H sells so well. You've seen the video where it was like a Monday Night Raw. It was Shawn and Triple H teaming up against, I think it was Flair and Shelton Benjamin or something. No, it was Evolution versus Shawn and I think a couple others. Yeah. And Triple H took a boot in the corner and he's like trying to no sell. And then he does the drop.
Does the Ric Flair drop?
Yeah, but he's like standing for like, it's like during the commercial break when he's doing it too. Like Sean's like trying to like blow him over and make him fall down.
One of my favorite things I've seen in wrestling recently is it was during the, it was in an NXT match and it was like Undisputed Era against the Authors of Pain against the Revival, I think. And there's this one spot where the Authors of Pain do this double team move on Kyle O'Reilly and he stands up and he starts hulking out and just stops and falls over. It's so good.
Yeah, no,
what?
I just got a boner.
This match couldn't get any more talent in it.
I know. Jesus Christ. I'm like, I don't know if you and I have talked about this, but Mr. Perfect may be my top of all time performer in my opinion. He's definitely top five, but he's in the argument for number one for me.
I can see that. I can see your opinion being that.
Now, some people are really happy right there.
Such a good match, dude.
This match is so overbooked and it's great. This is going to be match of the night.
Oh, yeah. Hunter, you're stealing your girl, dude.
So is this like, obviously, this probably is like, what, setting up a feud between Perfect and...
Well, they've been having a bit of a back and forth, and Perfect is due to wrestle Hunter on Raw, I think.
Pat Patterson.
Tim White.
Yep.
Oh. Love it. Yes, oh, I love
what
it.
What a... Great. Back in the day before that kind of thing was commonplace.
Yeah. In about a year, that's all you'll ever see is guys fighting out on the floor.
Suplexes on the ramp becoming like a body slam.
Yeah.
What a fantastic little spot. Doing the suplex on that and then to set up how devastating the concrete is to then set up the pedigree. That was brilliantly thought out.
But then also at the same time with the brawl outside the ring, you got Triple H being catapulted into the ring post.
Yeah.
Which actually helps lead up to a stunner.
I have a phone call. You guys need to talk amongst yourselves for a minute.
That was a nice little thing with
Oh, stunner.
Austin there. Like he goes for the rope choke thing and Hunter just gets out of the way and he's like, no, I'm not falling for that. Stunner win.
Yeah. You would have, that was a good match, man.
Oh no, it was definitely a really good match. Got to go 1-0 with that new music.
I love the double bird, man. Oh, God. The double bird was great. God, I hate that outfit. Those fucking stupid pants that Hunter wore at this time. God, they were awful.
You know, I when Triple H... The
fucking polo pants. God, they're so bad.
Dude, when Triple H goes in to the Hall of Fame as a solo. All right, Peacock commercial. Ours is for 60 seconds, just to let everyone know, for the Peacock commercial. But going back to Hunter real quick, like I would love, you know how like on A&E they had been doing that that Hidden Treasures show where they're like looking for like the old gear that like from like Taker and Kane and I would love for them to do something almost similar to that, but for Hunter, like around the time he goes into the Hall of Fame as an individual and like see what he still has from his Hunter Hearst Helmsley era.
Yeah.
Cause that would be kind of cool to see like what he has like still from that time.
I hope those pants get burned though. Those pants were awful.
We got like 6 seconds left on our Peacock commercial here.
And I'm back.
Perfect timing.
Everything good?
Yeah. Just my doctor's office following up on something.
Hey, you don't do that to Pig.
Matt's probably a member of the HARD Foundation right now.
Nah.
Hearing that, Todd Pettengill.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant because of Sonny. No, not because of Sonny.
Todd.
Doc Hendricks. I'm not feeling the southern accent from Billy Gunn.
Isn't he from Georgia, though?
Yeah, that's kind of his natural accent.
Yeah, he's definitely from
I don't know, but song. Like when he did like New Age Outlaws and stuff like that, he had a little bit more.
No, he still had the southern accent.
I guess maybe.
Bear in mind, when he was in the New Age Outlaws, he only ever said the word suck it. So
I think maybe because he's trying to force it a little harder. Because of the gimmick.
He's definitely playing it up, but
yeah,
that is his natural accent.
Yeah.
That's how he sounds in AEW now. Just older.
Oh God, can we keep Bart Gunn out of this match? Is like there a way to do that?
Why would you keep Bart Gunn out of this match? He's the talented one of the two.
You think?
Yeah. I don't think Billy Gunn is all that he's ever been made out to be. He's been carried by people his entire career.
Clarence Mason.
And if you need a better example of that, look at his solo run in WWE as like the one Billy Gunn. Or what was the other one thing he did? He had another thing that he did that was solo.
Well, first it was the whole Mr. Ass thing.
Well, no, Mr. Ass was him in New Age Outlaws that carried over to when he was in singles.
Yeah.
But there's a... He had another singles. Rockabilly, that's it.
Mm. Yeah.
That's right, because that was what was the lead up to him for teaming up with Road Dogg in the first place.
Yeah.
And I just have to say real quick, I love those tag team title belts.
Oh, yeah, those were the best ones.
Oh, yeah. I think the clear number two for me after those belts were the Raw tag team titles from the Ruthless Aggression era. I actually did enjoy those ones.
Oh, I quite like the current ones.
Oh, the penny the belts? The
SmackDown ones, yeah.
Yeah. It's actually funny. I was having a conversation with Dixon a couple nights ago. Yeah. We were coming home from the Caps home opener. And we were talking, and he brought up the fact that, like, I did actually used to own, like, the replica Raw tag team titles from, like, the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Like, early mids. And he was saying, because him and I, as you guys know, we've been friends for, like, over 20 years. And he was asking, it's like, how would you feel about getting, like, actual tag team belts to commemorate our friendship? And I was like, yeah, last time I did that, the dude came to my house, lied to my dad, and stole the belt out of my house. Promise not to do that to me. And he just starts laughing. He's like, oh yeah, I remember that. So, but he asked me, like, what belts would you do? And I was like, these belts that, you know, that we're seeing on this pay-per-view, I kind of told him, like, these are the belts that I'd really like to get, because, like, and Matt, you said, it's like, in our opinion, it's like the best belts.
Yeah. So I just got to say, that hair spot that they just did, the two guys, where they stopped short and pulled the guy back by their hair, that was freaking awesome.
This crowd is freaking dead.
Yeah.
That's a weird tag. Like, Bulldog was, like, already through the ropes at the point of the tag.
Yeah.
Well, he was also still having a lot of substance issues, and this was also in the middle of the
they were just rushing the spot.
Yeah.
True. But this was also during his time where he was in that trial, or, you know, in the trial for damn near killing that guy in the bar fight.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I actually...
He dropped the guy with a front face lock and, like, dropped him with, like, a DDT almost, and, like, shattered this guy's head, basically. And the guy survived, but, like, it was years of, like, court drama and, you know, lawsuits and stuff that Bulldog had to deal with, and it really fucked him up mentally. And this was also around the time, I think it's already happened, when Sean got the shit kicked out of him, and Bulldog was in the car and couldn't get out because it was a small car and he was in the back and couldn't get to Sean. But so, like, he had all that stuff all happen all at once, and it fucked him up pretty bad around this time.
Yeah.
Dude, he's so good.
Bulldog?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. I just finished binge watching Dark Side of the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt, you're talking about, like, the whole thing with Bulldog, and that sounds, it's like, darn, I'm trying to think of the one, blanking on it real quick. Shoot. I had it in my head which one I was thinking about, and then I just lost it. Thanks, Matt. But he brought up a point that I liked.
I love that move when Owen does that.
I'm Googling it.
The cradle.
Yeah, but the way he does it though is so cool.
Oh, that's what it was. The Road Warriors episode. And because, like, Matt, you had said, like, oh, he's going for all this stuff right now, like the substance and the trials and stuff like that. Like, I didn't know, like, I had known about Bulldog, like, with the 92 SummerSlam in Wembley and how they had to kind of fix things on that finish. But I didn't realize, like, at the same time, you're having the same issues with Hawk. And the finish to that match at SummerSlam 92 was like improvised at the last second because of like similar issues that was going on. So it was like, it's kind of weird how it's like, this is also kind of an era where you still have a lot of those issues behind the scenes that are affecting certain things on camera a little bit. And you just don't know about it until like stuff like Dark Side of the Ring or something like that comes out.
So we just saw Bart in like a rear chin lock trying to appeal to the crowd, which is weird because these are both heel teams.
Yeah.
So both of our first two matches have been heel against heel. Though Austin's more of a tweener, but he's technically a heel. Lovely neck breaker.
I'm sorry, but this match is already a little too long for my taste.
These two teams need to decide who's playing face in this match. Because, like, Bulldog's doing the whole, like, getting in, stopping from... You know what I mean? Like, he's the dumb face thing. But then, like, whenever he's in a hold, Bart and Billy are appealing to the fans. Like, I don't know.
Like, in my opinion, it feels like there's only, like, one maybe face in this match, and that's Billy. Because of...
But Billy's the heel.
Yeah, I know. No.
Billy is the heel.
If there's any baby face at all...
It's Bart.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bart just wants to win the titles with his brother. Billy wants to do it to get back Sonny. What the hell?
That's an...
That was horrid.
That was bad.
It was unique, don't get me wrong, but it was horrible.
Horrible.
God, like, I loved Owen Hart's music.
Oh, I love Clarence Mason so much. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
Who?
Clarence Mason.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to lie. It's a smart way to take apart the double team move.
Right. Like, no, don't get me wrong. Like I said, it was unique. It was awful. Like, Bulldog was waiting there for like 20 minutes.
Like, not only that, but the other thing that kind of froze it off a little bit is that
Billy could see him.
Well, it's not just that. It's also the fact that Bulldog technically had his hand on the backside of Bart. How does Bart not feel that?
Yeah,
that's the other thing that kind of froze it off a little bit.
Raymond Rougeau, baby. Are the Rougeaus in the Hall of Fame?
No.
Oh,
that needs to be fixed immediately.
Yeah, especially because one of them went on to be the Mountie.
Yeah, the least talented one.
Hey, he was still the Mountie. Okay,
I'm not saying he wasn't good. I'm just saying Raymond was better.
I love how it just says phone number no longer active. You see some dumbass try to actually call that number.
You know why it says on the on a McDonald's coffee, caution hot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, some there are dumbass didn't realize their coffee would be hot.
Yeah, there are people that are dumb enough to try to call that
Has JR been fired twice at this point?
Yep.
Like, legit?
Well, he already had his first bout with the Bell's Palsy. You can see it in his face. So they kayfabe fired him during that, I think.
And then made fun of him for it.
Yeah.
You can tell by the way his face is that he's had his first Bell's Palsy.
that was a little shot right there. Talks out of both sides of his mouth. Oh my God, that is terrible. Oh, I forgot about the fucking gladiator.
How did you forget about this?
Oh my God, that's awful. So I've decided that Ahmed Johnson had the Pearl River Plunge. My finishing move is going to be the Delaware River Plunge.
Why?
I don't know.
Is this our so much potential. They rushed him into the ring, though. He had so much potential. If they'd have kept him in, like, training for a little while longer, he could have been an excellent wrestler.
Who, Ahmed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're in commercial for 30 seconds.
And they're promoting Blood Money.
Yeah.
Or at least for us, they're promoting Blood Money.
Yeah.
Is that what they're calling it, Blood Money?
No. It's called Crown Jewel. But we call it Blood Money because it's in Saudi Arabia. And the funny thing is they have a match on that card that is Mansoor against Ali. And Ali, we're back from commercial, by the way, with Mr. Perfect's music. They have a match on that card, which is Mansoor against Ali. And Ali's like, they didn't even bother advertising my match. And I'm like, yeah, of course they didn't. Because Mansoor is going to win, because he always wins in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, are we getting a Perfect promo now?
I think he's taking Ross's place on commentary.
Oh. Because
he and Jim Ross were commentating a show on Sunday mornings at this time. And they were actually quite good friends. Like, they got on well on screen.
Mr. Perfect's got good music, too.
Some of the best music of all time. Like, this is top 10 music of all time.
Oh, easy. Yeah.
I like the old school, like, desk lamp on the the table.
So we've got Goldust against the man that we like to affectionately call Cokie McGee for the IC title.
God, he was so good back then. Jesus Christ. His character was so good.
It still is, if you ask me.
Oh, I know, but like, original Goldust is the best Goldust.
Yeah, for sure. Though I have a soft spot in my... While it's absolutely not politically correct, I have a soft spot in my heart for when he's teamed with Booker T and he's absolutely batshit insane.
Yeah.
Oh, when he had the
when he starts doing like all the movie quotes and shit like that.
And like he gets like electrocuted or something and he starts
Tourette's syndrome.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough, when Booker T and Goldust broke up and then Goldust got thrown into the thing that got him electrocuted.
Yeah.
That was in DC and I was at that Raw.
But then he and Booker T get back together.
Yeah. I think because it was because of the attack.
There's a time that he and Booker T are together and he's got the side effects of the electrocution.
Hey, look, guys, Johnny B. Badge, and he's going to the ring.
That man is coked off his tits.
Oh, yeah.
Disclaimer, we don't know if he's actually coked off his tits or if he ever did coke, but he looks like he's coked off his tits.
I know who was coked off his tits back in the day. The Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah. His His A&E documentary was really good.
Was it?
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
You should watch that whole series.
Yeah.
They actually just put the A&E documentaries up on a DVD. They had, yeah, as a two-parter. So, like, I think...
It's quite interesting because, like, some of them are just, like, fluff pieces. And then others are, like, absolute character assassinations. It's really weird.
Which ones are the character assassinations?
Warrior. Savage. And, like, one more that I can't remember off the top of my head. Just think, he goes back to being Johnny B. Bad after this.
Yep.
So when he leaves WWE, he has a run in TNA. And he goes back to being Johnny B. Bad for like four matches, and then he's gone.
Well, but doesn't he go also go to WCW and join the NWO after this?
I can't remember.
I thought he becomes part of the
NWO. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the NWO, I'm not going to lie to you. But once it got past like 78 members, I was like, yeah, I'm done. once it encompassed like the entire WCW roster except like Sting and Diamond Dallas Page, I was kind of checked out.
So you didn't like the 179 man NWO?
No, and then like it broke up, and then it got back together again, and then it broke up, and then it got back together again, and then it broke up, and it got back together again, and I was like, holy shit, you're the Four Horsemen. Only not as good. Except for that one time they had Mongo McMichael. McKay, you might be better.
They also had Sid at one point.
Yeah, Sid was good because he played his role, which was to stand there and be strong. Speaking of him, we'll see him in the next match.
So I've recently become un-a-fan of Sid. So like become for those
un-a-fan of Sid?
Yeah, well, you know that I've always been a Sid fan because like, yeah, I've always loved the big guys. But so he was supposed to do a signing at my buddy's store up in Long Island. And he fucking no-showed it, like no-called, no-showed, like
didn't. Yeah, that was recent too, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that was like last year.
What store is this?
My buddy Hastel Toy up in Medford, Long Island. It's one of the places where he sold Cardona, his diesel wrestling buddy, and Cardona.
Oh, I'm aware of Hastel. I just didn't know what the name of your buddy's store was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's,
I've ordered things from Hastel, so.
Oh, okay, it's called Hastel Toy. Yeah, I'm good. I'm actually good buddies with Mitch. Like when I go up there, we hang out and stuff. But yeah, ever since Sid did that to him, I'm like, fuck you, Sid.
Yeah, I'm kind of having that with Ric Flair at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, I still have to admire his in-ring work, but... Like, when all the Dark Side of the Ring stuff came out about the plane for Borat from Hell, and then he was announced the other day as a fucking Trumper, I was like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, yeah, not only that, but the, what was it? The Chris Canyon Dark Side of the Ring episode didn't do Flair any favors either.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't see that. What happened to that?
So Canyon's on Howard Stern, and this is after he's already like left WWE.
Yeah.
And he was talking about booking and stuff like that. And Flair actually called into the show.
And like and buried just him.
Buried him. Like you can actually see Chris Canyon's heart break on camera while Flair is just burying him over the phone on the Howard Stern show. And it's like, damn.
So one thing I've learned from what we've been doing over the last however many months it's been, right, is as much as we make fun of him, Mero's a really good wrestler.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, 100%.
Well, it also comes down to, like, the one thing that you're saying, like, when we're watching the Triple H Austin match, you know, you look at the like, the top guys, which was, like, Hunter, Austin, Michaels, you know, Perfect, and all these other guys, but then you had all these mid-level guys who really carried them, too, with the likes of, at the time, Goldust as a mid-carder. You have, you know, Mero is one that's carrying things. So, yeah, Mero.
Right, it's weird because, like, you've got the mid-card that's, like, Mero, Goldust, Helmsley, arguably still Austin at this point. And then in that mix, you've also got, like, Ahmed Johnson and Farouk, right? It's weird.
But like, it's like I said earlier, this was like one of the deepest rosters they ever had of just guys with pure talent.
Wait, but you can literally be... Let me list off some names here, right? Mark Mero, Goldust, Stone Cold, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Mr. Perfect, Farouk, Ahmed Johnson. One of these things is not like the others.
Yes. Well, all of them but one are Hall of Famers. Or should be Hall of Famers.
Should be Hall of Famers.
Yeah. See, I think Mero catches a bad rap because of the WCW, they did not put on great matches, and he got saddled with a really bad gimmick because of Dusty, and he got, you know, he made the most of it, but, like, he got put with guys who couldn't work, like guys that he's wrestling now, you know? And he does put on good matches, but when you're wrestling against shit, you know, when you step in dog shit, it's gonna smell. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And he was put in a spot where he had to step in a lot of dog shit in WCW.
Yeah. Back when he went back as like 7 or whatever it was.
Well, I'm talking about both guys, but yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, I've been thinking about it a lot lately. Everybody talks about how great of a, like, mind for the business Dusty had. Dusty was also the booker during some of the darkest times of WCW. Yeah.
I genuinely don't think Dusty deserves all the credit he gets. Yes, he was a great promo, but that's kind of it. I will always tell the story about how when I was watching through, like, the old NWA.
Uh-huh.
Right, and Crockett Promotions and that, and every week the television championship would be defended on television. Arn Anderson every week, Tully Blanchard every week, Magnum TA every week, and then Dusty wins it and it disappears for 6 months. He just doesn't wrestle on TV.
Huh.
It's awful. What a great sequence.
Yeah, that was awesome. Now, here's the thing. I'm not as familiar with his body of work from back then. How was he in the ring? Back in the 80s.
You've seen him in WWE, right? When he was Polka Dot Man?
Yeah.
That, but in jeans.
Ah.
And slightly less dancing. Oh, yes. Wake that crowd up, Dustin. You know he was pissed off that they weren't reacting to the match, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's just like, I'm going to wake these sons of bitches up.
Goldust was such a heat-seeking missile, man.
Oh, yeah. What a great moonsault.
That was
a yeah, that was.
Reminds me of Lacey Evans's moonsault.
She just had a kid today.
Yeah.
She finally had a kid today?
Actually, yep. She had it yesterday. They just made the announcement today.
That's brilliant. Well done, Lacey.
And actually, apparently, like, she came out and she did the Instagram post. Because of, like, hospital restrictions, she actually gave birth to her kid at home.
Yeah, so that her family could be there.
Yeah.
Cool.
But
dude, this is such a great match. This actually might be match of the night.
I can't wait for her to come back and her and Becky to be, like, the new moms backstage.
Well, the interesting thing is that I was reading that apparently during the entire time she's been out pregnant, she's been working out like nonstop because she wants to have a faster turnaround to get back.
So was Becky. Like, Becky's like a CrossFit machine.
Yeah.
Such a great moonsault.
But I have a feeling that we could get Lacey back sooner than when we got Becky back.
Yeah.
Because Becky waited, like, what, Becky and Seth had their kid in December?
Oh, what's going on here?
What's with these random... Oh, what? Oh, there here comes Hunter. Mike Chioda now trying to calm things down.
What's that referee's name?
That's Mike Chioda. The referee's
is it?
Yeah, the referee's
the dude in the aisle.
Well, in the aisle now is Chad Patton.
Chad Patton.
Yeah. So the order.
I wasn't talking about the dude in the ring. I knew that was Mike Chioda.
Yeah. So the order of the referees for the matches so far has been Tim White, Chad Patton, now Mike Chioda.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. I love this move.
Shooting star press.
So good, dude. He got so much air on that.
Potato imperfect.
So that's a hell of what am I looking for here? A seal of approval there. You know what I mean? Like having Perfect come in and put you over like that. Like that's huge for him. That might be bigger for Mark Mero at this point than the title. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, sure.
But like having Perfect come in and put him over like that.
Now potato him.
Potato him. Hey, it's fake Razor and Diesel.
Freaking Kane. Like
it's Glenn Jacobs.
Yep, freaking Kane sitting there.
At least with Glenn Jacobs doing the fake Diesel, he has like a slight resemblance to Nash.
Bobner looks a little bit like.
But like the guy doing Razor Ramon doesn't even look even close to Scott Hall.
And they had similar builds though.
I don't know, the fake razor looked a little like a little more out of shape compared to Scott Hall. Wow, they're gonna give us the match promo before sending us the Peacock commercial.
Yeah.
You said kick his ass, Vader, and I don't like you either, but kick his ass.
I have some bad news for you, dude.
Oh, I know who wins, but
you know what happens next month, right?
Yeah. Vader's is more fluid. Sin's powerbomb was more jerky if you watch that package. Vader's was much more of a fluid maneuver.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's better, though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, Vader's look better today.
And we're in Peacock commercial for 60 seconds. We got 50 seconds left on ours.
Yeah. If you're non-invasive, why are you a weird, slightly animated talking box at a restaurant? Sorry, I'm riffing on the commercial.
It's all right.
And we're back.
But do we want to be back?
Well, boys, this is my piss break match. See you later.
This sucks. Like, I should enjoy, like, this should be like my perfect style match, Mike, because I love the like big heavy hitter guys like this. Like, yeah. This is just the style of wrestling that I love, but I hate both of these dudes, so like it just, I don't know, it just sucks.
It's okay.
Like, Vader was a dick to me personally. Sid was a dick to my friend. So it's like, fuck you guys.
See, I've never met either of them, so I wouldn't know, like, kind of what they're like behind. Like, I remember the whole thing about, like, I know, like, I don't think it was just your friend, but I think he also didn't do another appearance last year. And he actually cited traveling during the pandemic. There are certain things going on that he just wasn't comfortable with. You know.
Yeah, but see, with my buddy, he didn't say any of that until afterwards. Like, he didn't call Mitch and say, hey, I'm not going to make it. Like, Mitch called him and said, hey, dude, you're on your flight, right? Or you're at the airport right now, right? And he never responded. And then he was like, hey, just checking, are you like getting ready for your flight? Did you check into your flight? How's everything going? Like, your room, you know, I've got your room paid for, blah blah blah. Never heard from him. And then the day of, it was like nothing.
Yeah.
All right, piss break achieved. Why is this match not over yet?
Because Sid's made his just finished making his entrance, and now here comes Vader.
Well, I'm gonna go piss again.
How long is this match?
Long.
Too long.
Fuck.
Although it looks like this is the last match before the main event, though. So
this match is 8 minutes.
Oh.
Once the bell rings, I guess.
That's not terrible.
It is the shortest match on the card. Which would be unsurprising because Vader gets blown up from his entrance. Whoever wins, we lose.
Yeah, pretty much.
If they both lose, we win.
Couldn't even be bothered to bring the belt with him. Stupid sexy Shawn Michaels.
Takes the handkerchief, blows his nose. That's one way to start a match.
Very, very unique, yeah. Vader just sold that clothesline like he died.
Wait, Vader actually sold something?
Well, he fell over like he died. I'm not sure whether I'd call that selling.
Is it bad that, like, Jim Cornette sells better than Vader and Cornette's not even a wrestler?
No, it's not.
Managers, almost all managers are really good sellers.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is...
they get to take bumps so very rarely that they do it well.
But the point that I'm making is that Cornette bums better than Vader does.
Yeah, again, a lot of managers are very good bumpers.
Yeah. Why is Vader ramming his penis into Sid Justice's head? He's like, come here, Sid, I'm gonna spark some sense into you.
I mean, what was it? Vader, don't you do it again. Sid doesn't want that in his face again.
On. This man is so bad.
Vader brings a new definition of small package.
Okay, that was pretty funny.
Oh, Timmy White's back in the ring reffing again. I mean, come on, Sid. You only got hit by a tennis racket. Not like somebody took a baseball bat to you or something.
I don't know. Have you ever been hit by a tennis racket, Mike?
Yeah.
I'm sure it one hurts.
That's loaded with the horseshoe?
Oh, not one loaded, but I have been hit by a tennis racket before.
And it hurts like a motherfucker.
I mean, Yeah, kind of.
That was an awkward way of taking a boot.
Oh, yeah, this is the prelude to him breaking his leg.
Well, it wasn't just that. It was like when Sid put the boot up and then the way Vader just kind of ran into it was just weird.
Is this match over yet?
Nope.
We still got a ways to go. Oof.
It should be interesting. We're not talking much during this match because it's shit.
Yeah, like both of them have gone, have tease going for the powerbomb and then don't go for the powerbomb.
And then they make the feud all about the powerbomb, and then it ends with a fucking chokeslam.
Yep. That's because they wanted to protect both guys' powerbombs.
No, it's because Sid couldn't powerbomb Vader, very likely.
Probably.
Now potato him, Sean.
Potato him.
We haven't had one single person just potato somebody out of the blue. Come on.
Man, they were really putting everything behind Sid at this point, weren't they?
Yeah.
Now, I'm pretty sure he wins the title next month.
Yep.
That's right. Huh.
I forgot they used to do it before Survivor Series instead of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So I just realized, right? So Shawn Michaels wrestles at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Against Goldust.
Yeah.
Who just had a match against Mark Merrow.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Oh, and then, of course, like, the interesting thing is that next month is the 25th anniversary of The Rock's debut as Rocky Maivia.
Yep.
Mom debuted last month.
Who calls Ticketmaster these days?
Yeah, because they want to put the title on this dude.
Yeah.
Come on, man. It's a simple fucking promo.
You can kind of see it on him that he's frustrated that he kind of flubbed it.
He does it all the time. Like, there's a clip where he's like, can we do that again? And he's like, no, we're live, dude.
Yeah. Buried Alive time after we get another Peacock break in a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's the Peacock break for 30 seconds for us.
Yeah. How long is this match supposed to be?
16 years.
Which match? The Buried Alive match?
Yeah.
Like 19-ish minutes, I think.
And we're back from our Peacock break.
Yep. And we have the promo package. As I said, this was supposed to be the payoff to their feud. Then they end up having a match at Survivor Series as well. So
now, curious question. What? Is this the first ever Buried Alive match?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure. I wasn't 100% sure or not.
So there's been 5 Buried Alive matches. There's this one. There's Stone Cold and The Undertaker in 98. There's Undertaker and Big Show and Rock and Sock. And then in 99. Then McMahon against The Undertaker in 2003. And then Kane versus Undertaker in 2010.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember seeing the latter two. Because I know, like, the 2003 one was the one that pretty much brought Taker back as the dead man. God, it's like unprotected chair shots to the head, man.
I mean, Mick's effectively the one that got him banned.
Well, not only that, but it was also, you know, the whole Chris Benoit thing too, because it was all
concussion. That didn't happen. They were banned before that, mate.
Yeah, they were banned in 99 after
Rock and Mankind. After they did the MT Arena match, right?
No, that was at the Last Man Standing at Royal Rumble.
The one with the handcuffs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's odd because they were still doing the unprotected head chair shots in 2000s. Because, like, Eddie's literal last match when he punked out Kennedy to make it. Like,
oh, they totally brought them back.
Yeah.
But, like, after the Last Man Standing, McMahon was like, no more unprotected chair shots. And then something happened and they started doing unprotected chair shots again.
Yeah. And then it was post-Benoit when they learned about the CTE stuff.
I don't know whether it might have been before that.
Mm-mm. It was effectively after Benoit when they learned the CTE. Because
they didn't learn the CTE stuff for Benoit until years later.
No.
That he had CTE. Everybody thought it was roid rage.
No, they learned that within about a year after the Benoit thing. Because it was even in the Benoit documentary that they learned about it pretty quickly. And they released the
finding. So according to, like, Googling it, it was in 2010 that they banned him.
Yeah. But he, but it's interesting, like, they did the official ban. They still don't do it in WWE today. But, like, we all know what the hazards are of the...
So to go by your logic, Mike, if they learned about the CTE stuff a year after Benoit died, that would have been in 2008, and they banned him in 2010.
Yeah. happened. There was slight delay then, obviously.
I think it took longer for the CTE stuff to come out, to be honest.
Yeah.
Than a year.
But I still find it interesting, though. Like, if you look at wrestling today, WWE still will not do it. Like, it's effectively banned. But then AEW does it. And, like, you've seen kind of...
They do it with gimmicked chairs. They don't do it with normal chairs.
Yeah. Pretty sure Cody's still regretting the one when Spears debuted with the gimmick chair.
But it was still a gimmick chair.
Yeah.
Which is why what happened to him happened. Because the gimmick broke and gashed him in the back of the head.
Yeah. And then actually, one of the things that I learned that was interesting was they were talking about Dynamite Kid. And Dynamite Kid apparently told Benoit, don't do the diving headbutt because it really screwed up my spine.
Yeah, like, but yet Daniel Bryan still does it.
Yeah, and it's like, it's interesting when you look at it in perspective. Dynamite Kid did it, and he said, don't do it because it screwed up my spine. Benoit did it, obviously gave him concussion issues and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, Daniel Bryan does it, has had concussion and neck issues. It's like history keeps repeating itself in weird in ways, you know. History says don't do it, yet you still do it.
Oh, that was sick.
What you thinking, Taker?
Oof.
Back when Taker's knees would support that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Going back to an earlier thing we were talking about, because Ben, you had asked, like, what was your favorite version of Taker?
No, Matt asked that.
Oh, yeah, Matt asked. I would definitely say, like, I told you guys, like, when I got into wrestling, this is how Taker was and what I saw past that.
Yeah.
I will say, like, when I go back and I, like, watch the older stuff, I definitely do like Ministry Undertaker. Like, I like how he, like, how we see him now, I do like, but how he really took the chance on himself to, like, add that, those extra layers to his character. Was really nice.
I don't know.
But I also have
a big fan. I wasn't a big fan of Ministry Undertaker, to be honest.
But I will be honest. His retirement match with AJ, where he kind of did like the hybrid biker dead man.
What the fuck? That might be the only time in his entire career the Undertaker tried a small package and he wasn't in the ring.
They just wanted to roll down the hill. That was so weird and out of place. With these random crowd shots, like they did
all it. All I'm doing is hearing weird noises in the background.
Yeah, I think that's your audio in the background.
I think Matt was dropping stuff. I don't know. Anyway, not important.
Yeah, I dropped something. That's what I was trying to pick it up.
Like, yeah, there's been some like random crowd shots. Like when you looked at like the Marrow match, you had like the most random crowd shots.
I mean, the WWE still do that today. Like, they'll randomly cut to someone in the crowd expecting a reaction, and then there is none. I know this match is well remembered, right? But it's kind of shit. Wait, that was impressive. Way to make me look like an idiot, Undertaker. Like, this was my big problem with a lot of Undertaker matches for his entire career. It was just punching and kicking. And then they did that thing where they're like, oh, he's the best pure striker in the WWE. No, he wasn't. Someone got a window open.
No.
I think it's the audio of the pay-per-view playing through Matt's mic.
No. Sounds like cars going by someone's room.
No.
Because if it was the sound of the pavement, it would be on constantly.
I mean, you can hear the cars from my window, but my window is closed.
Okay.
I just live really close to the road.
Fuck your balls, especially.
Oh, it's Earl Hebner.
Yeah, I just don't find this interesting, right? It's just punching and kicking. Like, there's the occasional cool move, like that diving clothesline over the rail, and then that one, like, push kick that Undertaker did to Mick that slammed him into the rail. But this is... I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Nice to hear you guys contributing to the commentary when I start the conversation.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm focusing on the match.
Let me tell you what you're going to see. You're going to see like 10 minutes of punching and 5 minutes of kicking. And then there might be a move or two in between.
Yeah. Man, Mick can sell. That was one thing about Undertaker at this point was I feel like he still wasn't great in the ring. Like, he got better as his career went on, but like, he still didn't sell great at this point, I don't feel like, and I don't know. Oh, is that the like shiv that he had?
Yeah. It's a fork, isn't it?
Is that what it is? It's a fork?
I don't know.
Can't tell.
It looks like a pen.
That's what I'm thinking it looks like, too.
Also, note, Undertaker is being stabbed in the head and he's not bleeding.
Yeah. I like how Vince goes, listen to this capacity crowd, and like, I could only hear like 5 people chanting.
And everyone who's chanting is like below the age of 10.
Yeah, exactly. except for those two guys in the front row. They're like way too into it. Oh, he could get up though, man. He had some athleticism for a big man. Oh, what is Foley going for? A chair.
Mankind's like, I'll get to you eventually.
Slow down, you some bitch. You tall asshole. Sell the damn shop.
Thank you.
I don't think Mick gave him a choice.
Well, see, so here's the thing, right? I get to not really selling the urn shot because that was like, first of all, Paul Bearer put nothing behind it. So it was more of like a, hey.
Wait, but I'm not necessarily mean like sell it insofar as ow, that hurt. But there should be a moment of just him going, did someone just hit me in the back of the head? Right, sell it insofar as, I wasn't expecting that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Paul hit him and he instantly turned around like, this is what happens next in the match.
But that is a typical Taker thing though. Like, we've seen it where, like, Taker has taken chair shots to the back and he just, like, snaps back at him, like, what the hell you just do? You know?
Right. Which is kind of part of my point.
But, like, if it was, like, say, somebody, like...
Did we not remember the part earlier in this show when I asked my favorite version of Undertaker, I said the retired one? And the Undertaker, for all he does for the industry and all the respect he's got and all of that, right?
Yeah.
For all of that, he's not very good. Like, he's a great ring psychologist. He can tell a story. His storylines are brilliant. His character work is amazing. But he is not a good wrestler. The match he had with Hulk Hogan for the Undisputed title is one of the worst matches of all time.
Was that the one in 2002?
I can't remember.
Yeah, that was
the one. I've kind of blocked it out of my brain.
Yeah, it was in 2002 because it was like a month after Hogan took the title off of Triple H. Don't go back to the ring. Get your ass back to that.
And again, this doesn't make sense. Why is Undertaker walking a man he clearly has debilitated enough to walk down an aisle back to the ring when he can put him in the grave?
That's what I was saying. Why are you walking back to the ring? Get back over that little burial site. Mick pinning the Undertaker. Come on.
Oh, what a surprise. He punched someone again.
Oh. DDT on the chair. I said it first, King.
God, King always stealing your moments, Matt. What's up with that?
Yeah, I don't know. Gimmick infringement.
Oh. Paul Bearer's facial expressions were always amazing.
Oof.
That was interesting.
I do believe he just tried to kill Mick Foley.
That was definitely a very interesting move.
Why are you putting things in the ring? Take him to the grave, you absolute Klingon!
When did that become one of your insults?
This afternoon. When I called you a Klingon.
Oof.
Why did you put it in the ring to hit him? Do it on the outside, you plum!
So we move from Klingon to plum. See, wouldn't this make sense to tombstone him at the grave?
Yeah. Hey, Ben, what's a gint?
Huh?
What's a gint?
Gint?
Yeah.
Never heard the term.
Oh, really?
Are you thinking of bint?
Maybe.
So, English slang, calling someone a stupid bint is like... the equivalent of calling him that gender's equivalent of a bimbo.
Ah.
So bimbo, himbo, whatever you want to call them.
How many Buried Alive matches has Taker actually won? Has he won all five?
He's not been in all five, has he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been on all five, but if I remember right, I think he's only won one, maybe.
Because
he loses this one, I think. Oh, wait, no, he wins this
one. He wins this one.
Yeah, he wins this one. I think this
might be... this is the only one he wins.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because he loses the one against Vince because Kane came out and screwed him on that one.
Yep. And no, wait, he wins the tag one.
So against Rock, yeah.
I think.
And I think Kane won his against... Taker because of Edge, I think.
So is this the one where all the people come out and beat him up?
I think so.
And like Mankind gets out of the grave.
Yeah, and then they bury him alive, and I think this is the one where he puts his hand through the dirt.
And he gets struck by lightning.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
The Executioner.
That was, wasn't that, Terry Bam Bam Gordy?
Yes. I think so. So, Undertaker just took one shovel shot, right? And he's selling more than he did the entire match. When he got, like, chair shots to the head. Just,
I hate how they're flashing the lights on this.
It's supposed to be the lightning and thunder. Right? And this is why they have the digger for the next one.
Yeah.
Like eventually they're just going to send more people out to like cover him up.
Yeah, because if I remember, I think like Goldust and Hunter, like a bunch of heels come out.
Surely they would have been back out by now, right?
Yeah, because here's Goldust. And there's Bradshaw.
Is that Crush? It was taking so long, they sent like five extra people out.
Yeah, there's Hunter.
It is Crush.
So stupid.
So fucking stupid. Like, if they're going to come out and help, why wouldn't they come out during the match?
Maybe they wanted to have it where, Taker gets the win. But then, that's where, like, you should have had them just come out.
I'm not talking about the booking. I'm talking about the logical sense of the storyline. If the five of them were waiting backstage to help Mankind bury the Undertaker, why not come out during the match and beat the shit out of him and then help him bury the Undertaker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I looked it up. The official record of the Undertaker in buried alive matches is 2-3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of those two was the Rock and Sock match.
Yeah.
People throwing their trash.
It's taking so fucking long. Undertaker's not even under there anymore.
Yeah, you got Bradshaw out there, you got Crush, like you said, you got, god damn, this is taking forever. You got the Executioner, Hunter.
He came back from the casket, man. He's gonna come back from this, you dingus. It's taking so long.
Goldust is out there now.
This is why we saw like the long strip between the Peacock breaks, because of this alone right here.
This is almost longer than the goddamn match.
This is longer than the match. It's also more technical wrestling than the match. This is why, starting with the next one, they had a digger full of earth, so they wouldn't be doing this shit.
I think you made your point there, guys.
But they've got to fill it up so we can do the hand come through the earth. Which is why it's there for so long.
How much boot sand do you think he got in his boots right there? Just sitting there and having it shoveled onto him.
I don't think he cares.
Dude, honestly, like, that would drive me crazy. If I get anything in my shoe, like, that's one of my big pet peeves. Like, I can't fucking stand it. Like,
You're talking about a dude that pulls his hair out for his gimmick.
I'd be miserable.
More than you usually are?
I'm not miserable.
That took a minute. But Marcus, like, something's going to happen. It's got to.
Yeah. They can't kill the Undertaker. No. Come on, Taker. Come back, man.
Come on, bro. They're like, all right, guys, you did enough. Just get the hell out of here. Go away. Yeah, Paul Bear's.
Because the others all ran away.
Because did his music hit? Was that the gong?
No, the storm started again.
Oh.
They should have started that storm when everyone walked away.
Ah, there's a lightning bolt.
And notice the hand doesn't come up through the grave. It comes up through the grass next to the next to the tombstone.
Yeah.
Right, so he's not even in the grave at this point.
Yeah. I actually do enjoy the little Easter egg they did of this for the match with Styles.
Mm, yeah.
That was a nice little touch.
So that was In Your House Buried Alive. What do y'all think?
Definitely enjoyed the Hunter Austin match and the Goldust Mira match. Those two were quite enjoyable, actually.
I mean, that's pretty much honestly, like with the In Your Houses, that's been par for the course. Like, it's been the mid card matches for the most part that have been the best. And
just in general, right?
Yeah, other than Mind Games, the main so far has always fallen short.
Yeah. Yeah, because like Austin and Helmsley was clearly match of the night, right?
You think over
Mero and Goldust close second. Mero and Goldust close second.
I'd have to agree with Ben on that one, with Hunter Austin being number one, with Mero Goldust being a close number two. You know, especially the fact that, like, I mean, yeah. Especially the fact that elements from the Hunter match bled over into the Miro Goldust match. So, right.
Just a small point, Mike. It's Mero. Mero is in AEW.
Oh. You did say Mero, but
no, you've been saying Miro. Oh. But yeah, everything else in the match was kind of shit.
Yeah. The tag match, sadly, was bad.
The tag match wasn't as bad as the other matches, but it still wasn't great.
Yeah.
Like, tag match wasn't bad. It was okay.
Right, but it wasn't great either.
It wasn't great. I mean, it was okay at best. It wasn't, like, you know,
it wasn't good, that's for sure.
But like Sid and Vader was like a what, a 2 or 3 time bathroom break for Ben?
Yeah.
I peed twice during that match. Yeah.
So. Once in his pants.
Yeah. That I'm not wearing, much like Matt. Anyway, next month we will be going to Survivor Series 1996 with, as we saw tonight, Michaels against Sid for the title. That being said, Matt, where can people find you on the internet?
The Twitter at the Big Matty CO3 and at on Instagram at the coolest fat kid you know.
Mike?
Twitter at the Lindenbaum 75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch doing the gaming thing at the Michael X75. Stay tuned because I'll be doing live content from DerpyCon on Halloween weekend up in New Jersey. And of course, everything's on the website at txhthockey.com. Hockey season is in full swing now. And of course, for this show, /AwesomeMania.
And for me, you can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find me, a good friend of mine, Jordan Johnson, and my wife doing video game stuff over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
You can also find Mike and I doing another podcast together called Voices from the Grid, which is a Power Rangers review podcast. We are in the middle of putting out season 2 content right now, and in the middle of recording season 3. You can find that at
txhthockey.com/VFTG
and on Twitter at
@VFTG_PR.
And with that, it is time to wrap up. Any final thoughts, Matt Harrell?
No.
Any final thoughts, Michael Lindenbaum?
No, just if you're buried alive, Matt, just get that man to that gravesite as quickly as possible, man. There's no reason to be in that ring. You know?
Yeah. My final thoughts would be like, skip this pay-per-view. It's not good. Maybe
just watch the opening match.
Maybe hunt down the opening match in the Mark Merrow match with Goldust. Maybe. Yeah. Like, they don't really add anything to continuity that you would miss if you went there. Anyway, it is time to wrap up, as we always do, by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, we will see you ringside.
Peace.